Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Iron and Fire by Ariana Nash. Narrated by Cornell Collins. Chapter 1. Silver, Bronze, and Gold. The Dragons of Old. The First to Come. Our World Undone. Betrayal and Devastation. Birthed a new creation. The worst was done. The jeweled reign begun. Elven folk song. Lysander.
Let me out and we'll call this an unfortunate misunderstanding. Lysander added a teasing smirk, the kind that had won over countless dragons in the past. Unfortunately, Chloe was human, and currently standing on the outside of his cage with her eyebrows raised, clearly unimpressed.
Or I'll destroy this little rebel village once I break out.
Let me out now, and you have my word, it won't come to that.
It was a bluff, of course. Lysander had thrown his weight at the cage bars, as man and dragon, and not a single one had shaken loose. Too narrow to slip through, too heat-resistant to burn through. He'd tried it all. Bluffing was all he had left, and that didn't appear to be working either. Chloe's lips thinned into the same judgmental line as her narrowing eyes. Making a grab for her was useless. He tried that too. She was fast, for a human. She finally managed a thin imitation of a true smile.
You'll have to promise more than that, dragon.
Chloe had a look about her that said she'd lived a long time on the fringes of war. Repair patches dappled her trousers and shirt. Wrinkles and scuffs marked her boots the same way as they did her face, making her seem older than he suspected she really was. Even her hair was chopped off, having it out of the way her only concern. Her appearance spoke well of the hard woman behind it. Lysander shifted his seated position against the back of the cage and spread his arms.
You want to take my boots too, or the shirt off my back? I have nothing else to offer.
She huffed a dry laugh and muttered something in her native French language, as she often did around him, knowing he had no hope of understanding.
You are the Amethyst Prince,
she finally added, her accent sharp, making the sound like the and amethyst sound sultry and exotic.
What I am seeing in you is not all you are capable of.
He dropped his head back and blinked through the bars above. If the cage wasn't enough, they'd built it inside a warehouse with only the smallest of narrow windows placed way at the top, near the roof. He couldn't see outside. Captivity hadn't been so bad to begin with. After all, it was just another cage, and he'd been raised in his mother's crushing emotional prison. But it had been days now, weeks even. They hadn't tortured him. He supposed that was a blessing. But boredom alone was its own kind of torture.
You commanded the Queen's monstrous flights, she continued.
He ignored her, keeping his eyes up at the ceiling.
You've killed thousands, and I'm supposed to just believe you won't hurt us because of your word?
She wasn't wrong. He had commanded the Queen's flights. Killed thousands was a little overdramatic. These days, in the absence of humans, his flights had mostly kept order among dragons, protecting the tower from the occasional wild northern interloper, while occasionally dispatching any elven assassins venturing into the barren lands. Lysander pulled a knee up and picked at his boot. But that was all before his brother Achaeum witnessed Lysander killing their mother, the queen. Everything had gone to shit since then. He'd practically handed the humans their victory on the beach, told them about the bronze forges they could use to ruin the bronze's underground warren, and at the time, he had every intention of giving himself up peacefully. They'd shot him, dumped a bag over his head, and marched him to this one. Chloe.
"If you want out of this cage, you must give us more," she said.
In the beginning, he'd stubbornly refused to acknowledge her questions.
But the cage had grown wearisome,
and he had little love for his kin.
So why protect them by keeping their secrets?
Some amethyst he could stomach, some he even admired. But none had any love for him. These days they'd all kill him on sight. Then there was Dokkal, the Bronze Chief, and his ruthless daughter, Mirren. Lysander had planned to manipulate them from inside their brood, but instead had only managed to narrowly survive them. It seemed wherever he turned, dragons of all kinds wanted a piece of him, and he had no idea why. He lowered his gaze. She stepped closer, this fierce human with her dragon-teeth daggers clipped to her belt. Daggers Eroan had taught them how to harvest and wield. Thinking of the elf brought a twisted smile to his lips. He'd had a lot of time behind these bars to think of Eroan.
If he hadn't let Eroan live,
hadn't tried to save him time and time again, that elf would have died in the queen's bed, and the elves wouldn't have learned how effective dragon teeth were against dragonscale. The bronze wall would still be intact. If Eroan had died, as he'd seemed so determined to do, little would have changed. Alessandra might have still been alive, or had Lysander still snapped and killed his mother, he'd have fled to the bronze line where Dokkal's brutal affections awaited. So, all things considered, maybe this cage wasn't so bad a place. Maybe he'd always been destined to end up right here, staring at the little human woman. "I don't know what you expect from me," he asked. "Anything I tell you, you'll assume to be lies." They would never trust him. Then it struck him. He wasn't getting out of this cage. Ever. Only fools trusted dragons. Rising to his feet, he approached the bars. Eye to eye with the human, she stared back, unafraid. "Don't expect anyone to come for me, if that's what you're hoping for." She glared back at him. He'd known members of his own flights like her, utterly cold, ruthless. She'd do whatever it took to save her people. He could admire that, one soldier to another.
"You're their prince, their heir." She tucked her thumbs into her trouser pockets. "They'll come, and we'll kill them when they do."
Laughter tickled the back of his throat. He swallowed before it could burst free. "You grossly underestimate a dragon's ability not to give a shit." He leaned as close as the bars allowed and watched distrust shadow her eyes. She'd take one of those daggers at her belt and strike at him in a heartbeat, once she got her answers. "Nobody is coming for me. They all prefer I rot in this cage." Finally, some flicker of emotion darted through her gaze, briefly softening it before her guard slammed back up.
"The old tales tell of how your kind took human form and infiltrated our ranks as spies, long before the world fell, when people still reigned from huge cities. Your kind made those people believe things. Some of my friends say your green eyes have magic in them, that you can make us believe things. Is that true?"
If he possessed that trick, then it was clearly broken, like the rest of him.
Hypnotic gazes.
Next, she'd think he could turn into a snake and slither through the bars. He clamped his fingers around the bars and lowered his voice, adding a smooth rumbling just for her. "I hate to break it to you, but you caught the wrong brother if you want to lure my kin here. So do with me what you will. Let me out or let me die." Pushing off, he backed away. She watched like she was waiting for him to reveal his true power. like he was supposed to be some important dragon prince who had all the answers, the key to turning the tide in their useless war. By night, they'd fucked up. Accium was who they truly wanted. His brother always had been the center of attention, the one every dragonkin wanted to know, to serve, the preferred amethyst prince. He whirled, sunk his hands into his ragged hair, and kicked at the bars. For once, just once, before it all ended, he'd like to be the one in control of his life. He couldn't remember a single moment in all his years when he'd been free enough to make choices. And now this place, and these humans. Were these four walls the last he'd ever see? What happened to your wing? The question whipped him around. She'd moved up close to the bars, her human eyes softer than before. Lysander sprang off his back foot and lunged. He shot a hand through the bars and grabbed at her. But she darted away, barking in alarm. Her warriors poured in, their movements spilling into his peripheral vision. He knew what came next. He let a growl rumble free. Let me out now, or I swear when I do escape, I'll kill you all. And that's the truth behind your lies. Her icy glare locked with his. You are never leaving this cage. He threw the weight of dragon behind his stare, darkening his presence with threat, and subtly altering his appearance, adding a sharpness to his pretend human edges. He looked less like them now, less civilized, more unknown. She wanted the truth? The shift threatened to tear him open and fill the cage space with a mass of enraged dragon. The human saw it, saw the air ripple, felt the intangible magic surge, maybe even tasted its lemony bite on their tongues. The sting of the dart jolted him from the madness. He tore the little feathered bolt from his arm and threw it back at them. Bastards. They'd started with the darts not long after he'd first shifted. After seeing a dragon up close, it made them scurry into the shadows like the frightened mice they were. His vision of Chloe swayed and tipped. The bars were the next to go. Darkness swirled. He was never leaving this box. He reached for those bars now and missed, fingers sailing through the air until his shoulder hit hard iron instead. He couldn't shift now if he'd wanted to. All of him was drifting apart and sinking to where the dreams waited. His knees hit the ground, then a hand. He reached his other hand through the bars, so at least part of him was free when the darkness swallowed him whole. Chapter 2. Eroan. The massive dragon had crashed through the tree canopy and slammed into the ground, heaving up a great blast wave of roots and dirt. When they fell hard. Eroan regarded the dead amethyst in silence, his gaze sliding over its narrow snout and glassy open eyes. Eyes easily the size of an elf's head. Blood and sizzling acids dripped from the gaping hole in the exposed fire pit, low in its throat. They'd been getting bolder of late and more reckless. Desperation, he guessed. To his right, hidden in the brush, a huge ballista sat camouflaged among vines, hidden from above. Its enormous dragon-teeth-tipped arrow had been the end for this amethyst, striking it clean in the neck, tearing out its fire pit and much of its throat, knocking it from the sky. The dragon had hit the ballista as it landed, by chance more than skill. The weapon would need fixing before its next use. His pride of elves muttered their congratulations to the shooter, an assassin of the order, one of Cheen's best, as she had proven with this kill. She took the pats on the back and handshakes with humility, and caught a Rowan's eye for a few moments. He nodded once. The full celebration would come later, back in the safety of Cheen Village. For now the deed was done, and the Dragonkin had lost another of their number. Glittering excitement shone in the eyes of his Order brothers and sisters. But more than that, honest hope. The tide of war was turning, one dead dragon at a time. "Take its teeth," he ordered, "and be quick. Wolves will descend soon." The carcass would be ripped to shreds overnight and fully devoured within days. Should another dragon come looking, it would likely turn away from the stench of its fallen kin. "We'll fix the ballista tomorrow." He turned from the dead beast and adjusted the dragon blade at his back. "Next shift, take your places." Order assassins melted back into the shadows, unseen until it was too late if you happened to be dragonkin. His heart swelled at the thoughts of how things had changed in a matter of a few months. Of course, it wasn't enough. One village picking off two or three dragons wouldn't make much of a dent in their numbers. All the villages should be doing the same. An organized force should be gathered, trained, educated with these new weapons, to make a push on the tower. Someone needed to be dispatched to Ashford to deliver the knowledge he'd gathered across the sea and rally the higher order into action. Her own suspected that someone should be him.
"That was one of the biggest I've seen yet."
Seraph dropped from the tree canopy to the forest floor beside him and fell into step along the narrow, winding animal track.
"Did you see its neck?"
She made a clawing, sweeping gesture at her throat.
"All gone. Nasty."
Her dark hair had grown out the last few months. She wore it in a high horsetail, unashamed to bear the scar of her missing ear tip. Rowan made an agreeable sound, but his thoughts were still lodged firmly in the future, in responsibilities, in waiting for someone to step up. Someone who wasn't him. The last time he'd done the right thing, he'd lost his home, lost people he cared about. His chest tightened. But change wasn't happening fast enough. Signs of an early spring poked through the undergrowth, green shoots through leaf litter, leaf buds swelling in the skeletal canopy above. More daylight hours meant more active dragons. The Order would need to prepare. The amethyst brood's behaviour had become unpredictable now their queen was dead. So far, their appearances had been sparse. But with winter fading and the days growing longer, that would soon change. Seraph hopped over gnarled roots ahead. Her sword sat neatly on her back, its handle poking above her shoulder. The twin to Eroan's. She never left her hut without it. The sight of it reminded him of everything he'd lost and the mistakes he'd made. Both swords had belonged to the only dragon he wished he hadn't killed. These blades were the very reason the elves had begun to make a difference. Seraph fell back into step and beamed next to him, her teeth bright in the dappled and fading daylight. She thumped him playfully on the arm.
"Smile, a dead dragon is a good thing. Your ballistae are working."
"It is," he agreed, "and they are."
"But?"
Her smile faded a little, but she clung to it, not willing to allow his sour mood to spoil hers.
"Nothing, I just...
We can do more. We must do more."
"More?" she chuckled. "We've killed three in the last few weeks. That's more than we did in years back at..."
The rest of her smile fell away, and her gaze fell to the forest floor, the word "home" unspoken. Rowan didn't reply. Wood smoke filtered through the trees. Cheen was close. Wood smoke meant home. but after he'd returned from the Bronze Lines and seen what remained of his village, Woodsmoke triggered different emotions. Ash and bone. Scorched, blackened earth where nothing would grow for years to come. The handful of survivors who had made it to Cheen described the dragon who had led the slaughter, a beast with scales of obsidian, as black as the night, eyes of gold. They hadn't seen the dragon until it was on top of them, and by then it had been too late.
Good hunting.
Jana's familiar voice rose above the others, welcoming them back through Cheen's outer barricades. He searched for her greenish-tipped blonde hair among the barricade lines, and spotted her toss a wave his way, her smile bright. He briefly nodded, but slipped through the open gates quickly enough that she wouldn't be tempted to draw him into a conversation. Seraph shot him an arched eyebrow. He ignored her, too, although he'd learned ignoring Seraph led to more questions later. His student had become a friend after they'd survived the dragons together. That friendship loosened her tongue more these days than it had when he had been solely her order leader, and someone not to be argued with. It was Seraph's earring he still wore high up at the tip of his ear as a reminder of the time before. Removing it hadn't felt right, despite its obvious twinkling disadvantage among the undergrowth.
"You should speak with her,"
Seraph suggested as they passed one of the central pathways linking the scattered huts. Cheen's layout appeared chaotic. Huts huddled along paths and beneath trees. Some stood on stilts. Others seemed perched in trees. But the design deliberately sprawled to prevent dragonfire from destroying everything in a few blasts. "And you should stay out of my business," he grumbled.
"It's just... you were always so close."
Erowyn shrugged off the sword and pushed through his door into his hut. The hearth was cold, the hut more so. Seraph followed, immediately gravitating to the array of various-shaped dragon teeth scattered about tables and leaning against the hut's walls. She picked up a tooth with a serrated edge as long as her forearm.
"That's a mean blade. You made all these?"
"Trying to." Erowyn set his dragon blade against the hearthside and paused, his gaze drifting to the small window. Of course he should talk with Jana. The fact she was alive had almost brought him to his knees when he and Seraph had staggered into Cheen, months after they were both presumed dead. Again.
"It's that Ross, isn't it?"
Seraph chatted idly.
"He's nice. He fishes. He has a pet hawk. He's funny, too."
"It's not Ross." He cut off her Ross appreciation assessment before catching her wry grin, sensing he'd been played. Maybe it was Ross. Ross and Jana had forged a bond since they'd fled the flames. She could do worse. Ross seemed nice. He wasn't a hunter or an assassin, but he did have a hawk. The male was harmless enough. Jana had found someone who could love her back the way she had always wanted. And that was the best he could have hoped for. Added to that her slightly rounded belly, and it seemed better for them all that he stayed away.
"I overheard Zena talking about you once."
Erowyn half turned from the cold fireplace and regarded the young Order assassin who had seen and endured more than most elves saw in their lifetimes. She'd been near death when the humans had found her below the Bronze Warren. Now her face was flushed from a day in the winter sun, her eyes bright. "Is there anything you don't overhear?" She continued to examine his half-finished blades and shrugged.
"Hut walls aren't thick. She said you were one of the best assassins she'd ever known, but you're terrible at being an elf."
He snorted. Zena had been full of little personal gems. She had liked to dangle cryptic bait and see who grabbed at it.
"What is that supposed to mean?"
"I wasn't sure until I got to know you. Anything outside of the Order, you're crack at."
He blinked at her. "Because there is nothing outside the Order."
"There didn't used to be."
She dropped the knife and reached to open the drawer beneath the table.
"Hands off," Erowyn warned.
Her curious nature would get her into trouble one of these days.
Eyebrow arched, she left the drawer alone, leaned back against the table and folded her arms.
Now there's plenty outside the Order. Now we don't just live to die trying to kill the Dragon Queen. She's gone.
She shrugged again.
Now we live to fight back. Now we get to live. Thanks to you.
He breathed in, filling his lungs,
taking the time to filter out too many unwanted emotions.
You know exactly why you shouldn't thank me, Seraph. He'd been honest with her about everything.
She was the only soul alive who knew it all.
His failures, his disgrace. He hadn't been the hero they all believed him to be.
If anything, that had been Lysander, the dragon prince he'd had killed on the beach.
Kill him. Make him suffer. Guilt and regret knotted low in Irwin's gut, making him want to curl around the pain.
He turned to the cold hearth instead, and taking up a stick, poked at the ashes.
Had he been alone, he'd have given in to the guilt and let it eat at his insides.
I often think about him, Seraph said. The dragon who saved me.
He paused and rested back on his heels.
Do you think Lysander's still there with those horrible bronze? I feel like I left him somewhere terrible.
He's with his own. He stabbed at the burned bits of log, wishing he could stab at the memory of having Lysander killed. Leave me, Seraph. I have those blades to heat and shape, and my shift starts at midnight. You should be well rested for your shift.
His hut door slammed, and with a labored sigh he dropped onto the floor. Kill him. Make him suffer.
Closing his eyes, he rubbed at his forehead, massaging away an ache.
Alone, in a hut that didn't feel like his own, and probably never would. He silently wished that moment on the beach had been different. If the humans hadn't used a bag to cover Lysander's head, if they'd let him speak, Irwin would have known who he'd condemned to death. He'd been so close, the prince who had saved Irwin, time and time again. The prince who had endured, who hadn't let his wretched existence beneath his tyrant of a mother beat him down. The prince who had saved Seraph from the worst they could do, and saved Irwin in more ways than one. A knot blocked his throat. He swallowed hard to clear it and opened his eyes, seeing only an empty hut full of shadows. The past was done. The future was where he needed to be.
Inside the Order House, 8 young elves, each clutching small dragon-teeth daggers, performed their routines. Kieran observed from the back of the longhouse, his scarred face grim. He spotted Irwin and held up 2 fingers as a silent signal to wait. Irwin hung back, keeping to the edges of the house so as not to distract the group, but observed them each in turn. They moved in perfect harmony. Each step smooth and precise. Sped up, these age-old sequences would kill. Irwin knew them like he knew how to breathe. A few of the trainees needed some polishing, but most were brilliant, as Irwin would expect of Curran's students. Irwin had been his student too once. With the sessions over, he greeted those who spoke with him until eventually the last had filed out, leaving Kieran behind.
They're ready for the field, Irwin said.
Some are, Kieran grumbled, turning away from Irwin to collect the students' wooden training weapons, replacing them on the racks.
Kieran wore his age well, although why he didn't join the elders, Irwin couldn't fathom.
He'd earned that right years ago.
Perhaps he and Kieran were more alike than he'd realized.
And they thought me a harsh teacher.
What brings you here, Irwin?
Kieran and him. There had been some harsh words spoken.
after which Irwin had left for the bronze front line with no intention of returning. Kieran had remained icy, and regarded Irwin now.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?